So we have seen so far two chapters and given two shurim on the Sefer of Shechter on Tefillah. For today's third shir, I actually want to skip a few chapters because he has three chapters which, although they're interesting, they're not, you know, directly related to davening or shul. One is tefillin, one is the kedusha of a shul, and the other is the idea of day and night and the zmanim. So they're all obviously related. It makes sense that they're in a sefer about tefillah. But I think since I'm not sure how many more shurim we're going to have on this, I skip those, and I wanted to go to the next chapter, which I guess technically makes it chapter 6, even though there are no chapter numbers in this. But the sixth chapter here is called Tefillah Bitzibur. And let me share the screen here for a second, and I made a little brief outline just to help us kind of follow along. And basically, there are a number of points in the chapter, and hopefully we can cover most, if not all of them. So he starts off basically as follows. The first big section of the chapter is highlighting the importance of davening in shul. And obviously, you know, I couldn't help but feel the relevance to this, as, you know, I think I'm the only one at the moment who's davening in shul, but Emir Tzashem, by you and other people who listen to this shir, I hope, in the not-too-distant future. So he starts off by quoting the Gemara Brachos Daf Vav Amud Aleph, which tells us, "Ein tefila shel adam nishma'as ela bebeis haKnesses." The Gemara says that really the best and proper place to daven for your davening to be answered, your tefila to be answered, is to daven in a shul. And the focus of being in a shul, as Rav Shechter points out, is even if you didn't have a minyan, hypothetically, it's still better to daven in a shul, even without a minyan. Similarly, the Yerushalmi there in Brachos interprets the pasuk "Dirshu Hashem behimatzo," right? The Navi Yeshaya very famously says, you know, search for or seek out Hashem where he can be found. Now, in the Gemara Bavli, Shechter doesn't quote this, but just to point out, you probably know very famously, we interpret that phrase as "bimatzo," as in when he is found, as a reference to the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, that Hashem is closer to us then. But evidently, and I have to say, this for me was a new makor. I was not aware of this Yerushalmi until now. The Yerushalmi says, "Dirshu Hashem behimatzo," refers to davening in shul, where Hashem can be found. Now, I have to say, taken out of context, that's actually a somewhat surprising or controversial, like, or potentially controversial source. Again, this is me editorializing for 30 seconds, only because, you know, rabbis and rabbis for generations have been pointing out that the correct approach in Judaism is actually not to view the shul as the center of Jewish life. That's more of like a Christian idea, right? In other words, Judaism is, you know, wherever you are. I think I heard that years ago in the name of Rav Hirsch, where they asked Rav Hirsch, you know, where's the most important part of Judaism? And he basically said, wherever you are at the moment. In other words, Judaism applies, it's a way of life wherever you are. So now, obviously, it's not a contradiction. We have an idea of Kedushat Beit HaKnesses and the importance of a shul, and that doesn't contradict the fact that Judaism is not a synagogue-based religion, a church-based religion, lahavdil, right? We believe that it relates to a totality of our life, you know, from the privacy of our bedroom to our kitchens to anywhere we are at the workplace. Nevertheless, you know, this, you know, again, and I don't think Yerushalmi's arguing any of that. I'm just pointing out that in context, you might, you know, one might misunderstand or perhaps chas v'shalom, you know, you can manipulate, let's say, or misunderstand this Yerushalmi. Where is Hashem found in the shul? Yeah, well, in the shul, not other places. Now, obviously, that's not what the Yerushalmi means, but I do think it's a little bit of an interesting lashon. But the bottom line is it's yet a second makor, and it's even more extreme than the first, that highlights the importance of davening in shul. Obviously, only if you can. That goes without saying. But still, we do realize the importance of that. And in order to stress the importance of being a regular shul goer, so Rav Shechter goes on to quote a very, very beautiful idea, I guess you could say a Dvar Torah, a Vort, of Rav Soloveitchik, based on the central role that we have from the paragraph in our Siddur, that which we call Ashrei. And let me just quickly clear my throat, and then I'll continue. So he points out, right, and we know that Ashrei is a very central part of our davening, right? Twice on Shacharis and once at Mincha. And he points out that we begin, we have as an essential part of that, what you and I call Ashrei, is actually the pasuk of Tehillah LeDavid, which actually comes from Tehillim Perek Kuf Mem Hei. And he said that this is recited based on actually a Gemara in Masechta Brachos, that the Hasidim HaRishonim, the early pious ones, they used to hang around in shul for an hour before and after davening. And the Gemara says that this, why is Tehillah David connected to that? Because the Gemara tells us that Ashrei Yoshvei Veisecha, Od Yehalalucha Sela, right? Praiseworthy are the Yoshvei Veisecha, those who dwell in your house, who are Yehalalucha Sela. They're continuously praising you. So this was the basis of the fact that they stayed in shul, Tosfos explains, as much as possible to extend their prayers, their praises, excuse me, of Hashem. So, okay, fine, that's the makor. Even though we're not Hasidim Rishonim, we're not even Hasidim Achronim, but still, not even with an uppercase chet or a lowercase chet, but still, that's where the minhag comes from. Okay, comes along Rav Soloveitchik and made the following diuk. So beautiful. The Gemara, the Pasuk says, Ashrei Yoshvei Beisecha. The Pasuk does not say, Ashrei Ha Yoshvim Beisecha. Praiseworthy are all those who dwell in your house. Right? Ashrei Hayoshvim Beveisecha. That could connote, said Rav Soloveitchik, I'm giving props, I'm giving a compliment to anyone who happens to be sitting in your house. But that's actually not what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Ashrei Yoshvei Veisecha. Yoshvei, he says, are the dwellers. The dwellers. That is to say, people who are consistently, regularly in shul. He points out that the Gemara uses the phrase Yoshvei Ha'ir when it's speaking about the halacha of Ir HaNidachat, right? Ir HaNidachat, God forbid, a wayward city. More than half the people are committing Avodah Zarah, has to be destroyed, razed. Well, who gets included in that terrible Gzeirah? So the Gemara says in Masechah Sanhedrin, only people who are considered inhabitants of the city, the Yoshvei Ha'ir, which is a term in Dvarim Perek Yud Gimel, and the Gemara understands that that means you have to have a certain level of permanence in the city. And based on that set of Soloveitchik, here also, this is what we're describing in the paragraph of Ashrei, that the phrase Ashrei Yoshvei Veisecha refers to the people who are considered Yoshvei. They are consistent, if you will. They are tenants, if you will, of the shul. Even though we don't actually live in a shul, but you can be considered a tenant, a regular dweller of the shul, if you come regularly, and, or Schechter adds, psychologically, you view that as part of your true home. There is a phrase which I put on the sheet there. It does not appear in the Sefer, but it just struck me as clearly what Rav Schechter is describing, or Rav Soloveitchik is describing. I have heard this before many times, obviously perhaps a generation slightly above mine, let alone yours, but sometimes you hear a person described, I'll say it this way, I've heard this at funerals. Sometimes when people are eulogizing a certain person, as a compliment, I've heard people described as, so-and-so was a shul yid. And actually, depending on what type of Yiddish they say, they might call it a shiel yid. And what that's describing is exactly this idea. There are people who go to shul, but then there are people who are shul yidden. Shul is just like, it's in their blood, it's part of who they are. It's among, if not the most important, hour plus of their day, or those times they're in shul, they would never miss it. When they're there, they're part of the furniture. It's just part of who they are. They're a shul yid. Well, that's exactly what Rav Soloveitchik is being medayek, Ashrei Yoshvei Beisecha. That the people who are getting this praise are not people who just happen to be in shul, but people for whom shul is some kind of a permanence. And then Rav Soloveitchik went on to suggest, this is also, again, I'm not familiar with this from another source, but he said that the Rav suggested that the Perek before this, in Perek Pei Dalid of Tehillim, Perek Pei Dalid, which is the perek that actually includes the words Ashrei Yoshvei Veisecha. The big phrase of Ashrei, the Tehillah LeDavid, all those other lines, that's actually from Kuf Mem Hei. But what you and I say in the Siddur actually includes first some introductory psukim. So that first introductory pasuk of actually the one we're talking about now, Ashrei Yoshvei Veisecha, comes from Perek Pei Dalid, and the Rav explained that that perek, he suggests, was really originally recited, it was instituted by David HaMelech, to be recited by the Olei Regolim when they were leaving the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim to go home after Yom Tov was over. What was the explanation? Why does the Rav say this? So he said, it's based on a recognition that obviously everyone has a place that they live. They live in, the Galil, they live in the south, they live in Beit Shemesh, wherever they live, right? So they're going quote-unquote home. But if you look at that paragraph, the whole parak peidal in Tehillim, the parak speaks about actually how much a Jew yearns to be in the makam of Kedusha. Ma yedidos mishkan osayich. How beloved are your dwelling places. Even a tzipor matzah bayis. Even a bird finds a home, and a bird only lays eggs, or Soloveitchik said, where they're comfortable, where they're home. Therefore, that's why a pasuk hey of that parak pei dalid, pasuk hey, ashrei yoshvei beisecha, that the Beis HaMikdash is the location we view as a true makom, a true home, and even as people are leaving the Beis HaMikdash, leaving their aliyah l'regel to go back home, they would express this prayer as a way of saying, halavai, halavai, if we could, we wish we could always be in the Beis HaMikdash. For practical reasons, we have to go home, we have work to do, we have a parnasa to make, etc. But nevertheless, this is our true home. And this is where we really wish, you know, home is where the heart is, and therefore we really wish we could be there. And said Soloveitchik, that's also the next phrase, Ode Yehalelucha Sela. We praise, we wish that we could be praising Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash, Sela, continually. Okay? Anyway, that is a very beautiful idea. And then one final nekuda on that, as he points out, that also we have the parak continuing in parakum days of Ashrei Ha'am Shakachalo. Ashrei Ha'am Shashem Elokav. What does that mean? Ashrei Ha'am Shakachalo. Praiseworthy are the people for whom this is so. Kachalo, it's kacha, it is for them. Ashrei Ha'am Shashem Elokav. Praiseworthy are the people who Hashem is their God. And it said, this is another line that we add at the beginning of, in anticipation of, Tehillel David. Because this pasuk also expresses the same idea, that we are praising those people who remain connected to the Beis HaMedrash, even after they leave. Shekachalo, again, they're a shul yid, whether they're in shul or not, at this hour of the day, but that's really, so to speak, where their heart is. And if you put it all together, Rav Schechter summarized, we learned a very, very important lesson, which is why he thinks that this is the deeper meaning, why this paragraph, or this tefillah of Ashrei, is so central to our davening. Because all of these psukim combined teach us this important lesson, that a person should view their shul as their truest home. That when a person davens, you have to, so to speak, forget passage of time, or otherwise you might have to go before or after. And you should just focus on being in this special, special place. The Gemara in Brachos on Daf Chet Amud Aleph also makes this point. Make two more points before we get to the next section. Number one is the Gemara there, Brachos Daf Chet Amud Aleph, La'olam yikanes adam shi'ur shnei ptachim b'beit ha'kneset v'achar kach yitpalel. A person should always go in, so to speak, the length of two doorways into the Beis HaKnesses before he davens. And this, Rav Schechter explained, you know, homiletically, or maybe this is also the pshat, but certainly homiletically, that you shouldn't sit next to the door. Right? There are always people, it's a human tendency, right? I know this when I give shir in yeshiva or even in a shul, right? There's certain kind of people who always want to sit near the door. They always want to sit in the back row. And you know, I can't say that I love that, but okay, that's just my shir. But when it comes to davening, what we're saying here is a person shouldn't be sitting by the door. That is to say, a person shouldn't be half what, you know, half the way out the whole time. Shouldn't have one foot out the door even before he gets there. When you go into shul, shnei ptachim, you need to be there. Even if you have to leave, of course you're going to have to leave. Maybe even have to leave early. But mentally, I'm all in. That's how we understood this Gemara of shiur shnei ptachim. I think that's one very nice idea. And along the same lines, he makes this point one more time, and that is based on the Gemara also in Brachos, Daf Samach Beis, which says, HaNichnas HaBeit HaKneset Tadavin Mutter La'asoso Kampandria. Now the simpler understanding of that Gemara is that you're not supposed to usually just use a shul as a shortcut. If you have to go around the building or you can walk through the shul to the back door just to for a shortcut, that's asur. But if you're davening anyway, if you already davened in the shul, then you're allowed to leave, you know, in a quicker way than you otherwise would be able to travel. That's allowed. However, he pointed out that if you look at the Rif and the Rush, they have a girsa that says not is it allowed, but it's a mitzvah. What does that mean? It's a mitzvah. If I've davened in a shul, it's a mitzvah to use the shul as a shortcut. So the way he interpreted this, I'm not sure if this is Rav Shechter or the Rav, but I think it's so beautiful. What does that mean? How would you use your shul as a shortcut? So clearly, if you think about it, if I'm using the shul as a shortcut, I'm not exiting the same way I entered, right? Just, if you think about it, commonsensically, right? That wouldn't be a shortcut. Then I never would have gone in. Any situation in which you're using a shortcut, even if it's mutter, right? You're going in one door, and then there's some other door which lets you more directly get to point B instead of going around. So he says, perhaps that's what the Rif and the Rush meant when they had their gears of mitzvah lasos. If you're anyway davening, mitzvah lasos compadria, it's a mitzvah. It's not always possible, but where possible, it's a mitzvah to exit out of a different door, out of a different door. Whether that's a shortcut for you or not, but the key is out of a different door. What's the idea? By lingering in the shul and going looking for another door to exit. That's another way, by deliberately walking through the whole shul. Something that ordinarily, just to walk through the shul for no reason, that's usur. That's not covered by sekneses. But if I'm anyway in shul to daven, and then I linger and I dafka look for some other way that requires me to walk through the shul to get to my car or whatever, that shows that the shul is my home. And last but not least on this, I forgot to put it on, I did put it on the sheet, the Tosefta in Megillah, which is, Rav Shechter makes the following idea based on that. In most shuls, if you'd ask a person, you know, where is the more bakovetic, where's the covetic place to sit? Some people will tell you up front, right? The Mizrach wall, as it's often known, right? In Yiddish, they call it the Mizrach Wand. So Rav Shechter said, people often think that the reason is that that must be closer to the Aron Kodesh. But Rav Shechter said, that's not why. That's not why. Now, why do rabbis often sit in the front? So that could be for any one number of reasons, or it could even be for this reason. But Rav Shechter said, what's the real reason why, whether it's the rabbi or anybody else, in a lot of communities, it's like really a position of kavod to sit in the front. So he says, based on the idea of the Tosefta. The Tosefta says that a shul should be built with its entrance placed opposite the Aron Kodesh. Right? Again, it's not always true. Not every shul, you know, has the location where that could be done, you know, architecturally. But in theory, you should be entering the back of the shul. And then you have to, the front of the shul is the Aron Kodesh. That is true in a lot of shuls, not all, but many. So said Rav Shechter, that's the idea. By sitting in the front of the shul, what you're really doing is, it's not so much the front or Aron Kodesh. What it is the furthest area from the door. The furthest from the door. That's the idea. It's a way, it's a symbolic way of showing, I'm not in a rush. When I'm here, I'm here. I'm going to linger as long as possible. Okay, next point. Tefillah bit Sibur. So he points out that Rabbi Kiva Eger, the Gilyan Hashas and Rabbi Kiva Eger, he points out that there's a Tosfos that has a girsa. We start off the shir by saying, Ein tefillah shel adam nishmat ela bebeit haKnesset. We talked about the importance of davening in a shul. But there's another version of that which says, Ein tefillah shel adam nishmat ela im hatzibur. Ela im hatzibur. And that's the idea which Rav Shechter develops here in this second section about how davening with a tzibur makes your tefillah much more likely to be accepted. It's considered a more effective tefillah. And it's a very, very powerful idea. The Gemara in Brachos, Daf Chet Amar Aleph, says if you, in the name of Reish Lakish, if you live in a community and you don't go to shul, again, not talking about where Corona doesn't let you go to shul, but you don't go to shul, so the Gemara refers to you as a shachein ra, a bad or an evil neighbor. So a lot of achronim, a lot of people are bothered by that, right? Not what you were expecting, right? Not what you were expecting. If I don't go to shul, I'm a bad neighbor, right? If I don't clean up the garbage, if I, you know, make too much loud noise at midnight, that's a bad neighbor. If I don't go to shul, I'm a bad neighbor? What does that mean? So Rav Soloveitchik explained that he only understood this halacha once when he went to the Boston Symphony Orchestra. Interesting, okay. So the Rav went to the orchestra, he went to the symphony, and he learned this. How come? Rav Soloveitchik said he noticed during the concert that the violinist is playing the whole time, working very, very hard, schwitzing. And there was another person who was the cymbal player. And in the whole concert, the cymbal player banged his cymbals just three times. Three times in the whole concert. So evidently, this is not so polite, I wouldn't think, but I guess Rav Soloveitchik, you know, I'm sure he did it in a polite way, but it's a little bit blunt. Apparently, he went over to the cymbal player, and he was very curious. He wanted to know, does he get paid as much as the violinist? The violinist is playing the whole time, and he only had to do it three times. And he describes how the cymbal player got very upset at him. And he said, emphatically, of course, everyone in the symphony gets paid the exact amount. Why? Because a concert requires the perfect blend of each of the various instruments. Every sound is critical in the symphony. So too, said our Soloveitchik. That's what the Gemara is saying. If you're part of a community, in order for the tefillah to be ideal, every person has to play their instrument. Everyone's got to show up to the concert. Everyone has to be in shul. If you choose not to go to shul, it's not just pshat that it's going to be bad for you or less good for you. It's that you have negatively impacted, subtly, but negatively impacted everyone else's tefillah. Because now it's missing one of the important, you know, musical instruments that otherwise would make the symphony that much better. A community requires the blend of all of its inhabitants' tefillos. And if you don't show up, you're a shachein ra. The Zohar in Parshas Vayechi says that when a person davens by himself, right, obviously relevant to all of you who are still having a daven at home, when you daven by yourself, the Zohar says it's, you know, it has a less of a chance, it's not as effective. Why? Because the tefillah only goes in front of Hashem if it's offered with tremendous force, tremendous kavana. You need more kavana when you're by yourself. Why? Because he explained that Hashem is first going to really carefully examine, or the malachim, whoever, really examine that tefillah before deciding and permitting and allowing it to enter before Hashem. He's going to examine it very carefully. Maybe it's worthy, and maybe it's not. However, says the Zohar, when a tzibur davens, then all the tefillos always go to Hashem. And this is an idea which you can find in other sources as well, that again, the idea of the tefillah b'tzibur being much more effective. What's the pshat? So he explains something that a lot of Sfarim explain. He actually gives a particular mashal. He says, if you buy an individual apple, and it turns out to be rotten, you're going to right away get your money back, you're going to give it back. If you buy a big bushel of apples, or a big, you know, cluster of grapes, and an individual one is not good, no, that's just how it goes. When you buy the bushel, when you buy the, you know, container of grapes or apples, you know that they're not always necessarily going to be. And the idea is, if you're part of a tzibur, so then the tzibur as a whole, in toto, gets in. The fact that maybe you're a little bit mushy, maybe you have a few bruises, it's okay, you're part of the cluster, you're part of the group. But if you're the only individual apple, you're an individual grape, you're only davening by yourself, then the spotlight's all on you. Maybe you can withstand God's stare. Maybe you can withstand God's spotlight. Or maybe not. I'm actually reminded of, Rav Shechter obviously does not quote this, I don't know if this is just apocryphal or not, but it's certainly believable. They say that back in the day, when Rav Lichtenstein was still in the Rav Shir, but Rav Shechter then had also entered the Rav Shir, obviously Rav Lichtenstein was older, that, you know, the two of them used to sit in front, and the rest of the Shir would sit single file behind those two, so that the Rav wouldn't see them. They, you know, they joke, again, this part I assume is an exaggeration, that if Rav Shechter or Rav Lichtenstein, you know, bent over to, you know, to pick up a pencil or to tie their shoe, you'd have 15 guys behind them going, because no one wanted to be seen, right? Because I never, you know, had the white light of the Rav in his Melo Kocho staring at me. But even though it was much less ferocious, even being in a Rosenzweig shear, I could tell you, you know, when I was younger especially, didn't necessarily want to make eye contact. Because if you make eye contact, he might call on you. Maybe I'd know the answer, but maybe I wouldn't. So that's the same idea of tefillah b'tzibur versus tefillah b'yachid. When you're b'tzibur, you know, high tides lift all boats. When you're b'yachid, maybe you'll pass, maybe you won't. But that's certainly quite the challenge. Okay, let's see if we can get one or two more points in. We start a little late, so we'll go another 5 more minutes, if that's okay. He then moves on to an incredibly important point, actually quite relevant, especially nowadays, for those of you who are not in shuls, and that is, to what extent is tefillah b'tzibur just a good thing, and to what extent is it a bona fide chiyuv? Now this is a major machlokes. The way Rav Shechter presents it, he presents it as a machlokes achronim between Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Igros Moshe, in Or Chaim Chelik Beis, Simen Chav Zayin, that's a famous tshuva of Moshe, where Rav Moshe argues that he thinks absolutely a chiyuv to daven in a minyan. Again, not when you can't, but a chiyuv to daven, all things being equal in a minyan. That's Rav Moshe's shita there. On the other hand, he quotes, and there are other Achronim who agree with this, but at this point in the article, he quotes the Emek Bracha. The Emek Bracha is a sefer written by somebody named Arya Pomeranchik, who was, I believe, like what they call a Talmud Chover. Not that much younger, but he viewed himself as a Talmud of the Briska Rav, of Rav Velvel Soloveitchik. So he has a beautiful sefer called Emek Bracha, which is very Brisker, very Lomdish in style. And there, Rav Pomeranchik has a lot of proofs, in his opinion, that tefillah b'tzibur is not an absolute chiyuv. It's a hider. Your tefillah is much more likely to be answered. You're in a bushel of apples, etc., etc. It's great, but not a bona fide, an absolute chiyuv. And based on that approach, there are a number of nafkaminas, obviously you can only imagine, and even all sorts of things that Rav Pomeranchik explains based on that. So, for example, he talks about even to what extent are you allowed to have a hefsek in between Birkot Kriya Shema and the Tefillah B'Tzibur. That's one area where perhaps, depending on how much of a chiyuv you think it is to be in the Tzibur, which might be broken if there's a hefsek by one person. And I'll mention one more thing before we get to the last part of this piece, which is something very, very relevant, which is, what if the only way to daven with a Tzibur is to do what they call, colloquially, tarte desatre. Right? They're going to daven both mincha and ma'ariv, you know, after plag, but before shkia. Right? Or after shkia, but before tse. Something like that. So, we know that, you know, that could be the time, right? Between plag and shkia, could be mincha time, could be ma'ariv time, but if you do both of them, you're basically saying, one second, the same period, it's mincha, that means it's still daytime, ma'ariv, it's already nighttime. So ordinarily, you're really not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to do that. The question is, what if the only shul in town is davening tarte b'satre? What do you do then? Right? I don't know, Max, what's common in England, but as Ariel no doubt knows, it's certainly very common in many parts of the American Orthodox community, certainly on even on a weeknight and certainly on a Friday night, right? If you have a fixed 7 o'clock mincha ma'ariv the entire summer, you know, you're going to inevitably be tarte b'satre, right? Every other time of the year, the time fluctuates. But somehow, you know, obviously because things get later and earlier. But if you keep it at one time, memela, it's obviously going to become a tarte desatre. So what should you do in that case? So it turns out it's a machlokas achronim. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Magen Avram, who allows that. He thinks it's permissible. If that's the only way to get tefillah b'tzibur, it's mutter. However, I have heard many times from my own Rebbein, Rabbi Willig, Rabbi Schechter, absolutely not. Absolutely not. They hold that tarte desatre is really wrong. Plus, tefillah b'tzibur is not an absolute chiyuv that would anyway justify that. So they have often suggested, and I've done this in the rare occasions myself, daven mincha b'yechidus. And then you could daven, you know, before plag, and then daven, you could daven ma'ariv after shkia. Not a problem. But it's better, I've heard this from them, better to daven b'yechidus than daven mith minyan if it means tarte desatre. Now, it's not 100% a nafkemina of this previous machlokes, only because even Rav Moshe Feinstein said it was better to daven b'yechidus, even though he thinks it's usually a chiyuv to daven in a minyan, because he said that the chiyuv to daven with a minyan is only if the tefillos are going to be at a correct time. If they're going to be not at a correct time, so then even Rav Moshe holds generally a chiyuv to daven b'tzibur. But okay, but certainly that might be related. Very briefly, quickly, two more points. Number three here, Mikra HaKodesh. So just tell you briefly, Rav Schechter has a beautiful idea based on the Ramban in Vayikra, that perhaps even if you hold that tefillah b'tzibur is only a urgently preferable thing, but not a chiyuv during the week, it could be that on Shabbos and Yontif, it is a chiyuv. And that's because the Ramban says that the reason that we call Yontif Mikra'i Kodesh, right, in Emor and stuff, right, Yontif is the Mikra'i Kodesh. What does that mean? So he says Mikra'i Kodesh is related to the expression of Kru'e Ha'eda, when someone comes together as a congregation. And what that means, says the Ramban, is that Shabbos and Yontif are days of, I'll use the English that Rav Schechter has here, holy assemblage. A tzibur getting together for a holy and sanctified purpose. And there's a chiyuv for everyone to gather together in the Beis HaKnesses to publicly declare the sanctity of the day through the tefillah b'tzibur, through the Talmud Torah b'tzibur. And therefore, the Ramban, who you remember in our first year, Ramban who says daily tefillah is only derabanan, but tefillah on Yontif and Shabbos is elevated to a status of a mitzvah midoraisa. So that's itself very interesting. And last but not least, he adds, there's an idea of minhag tov, that if you do something, a good thing, even if you didn't declare, I am now always doing X or Y, but if you do a minhag tov, it can become a binding neder. And therefore, if a person regularly goes to shul, it may then become a chiyuv to go to shul, even if you hold, like the emek bracha, that usually tefillah b'tzibur is not inherently a chiyuv. But if it becomes your personal minhag tov, which it should be for everyone, so then, in fact, it may actually become a minhag tov. And this is something that he quotes here from the Netziv of Elazhin, who discusses, even though there is a little bit more, he has discusses the role of Kaddish, but we're running out of time, so od chazon lemoed. And anyway, have a great morning Seder and Shir, and we'll pick up with this series, Emir Tz Hashem, next week. All right, have a great day, guys. Thank you.